The opinions voiced in this program are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult with your attorney, accountant, and financial advisor or tax advisor prior to investing. Investment advice offered through Northwest Quadrant Wealth Management, a registered investment advisor. Welcome to the Financial Focus Radio Show with your hosts, Tyler Simonis and Josh Finelli. Join us as we discuss markets, bring transparency to issues within the financial services industry, and bring honest, thoughtful analysis every week.
Good morning, everybody. Thank you for joining us on Financial Focus Radio. My name is Tyler Simonis. That guy right there, he is one Mr. Josh Finelli, and we are partners at Northwest Quadrant Wealth Management. Here in the beautiful spring Pacific Northwest. Boy, oh boy, do I love this. The days are getting longer, warmer, sun is shining. Everybody should be happy. People are still driving around Bend like there's 6 feet of snow on the ground. I don't understand why that's true, but I guess that's the new reality that we live in. Just because I have some place to go doesn't mean everybody else does. All right, if you have a question for us or a comment, give us a call, 877-670-7117, or you can always email us by going to our website, northwestquadrantwealth.com. Good morning, Mr. Finelli. How goes the battle at the Finelli household?
Loving soccer.
Yeah? Oh, yeah, that's right. Josh is our resident Pep Guardiola. For those of you that don't know, Pep is the manager of the
Manchester City.
Man City, but what's the three things that they won last year? What do they call it?
The FA Cup, the Champions League.
No, but they call it the try something. What do they call it?
The triple.
I forget. Whatever. Yeah, I don't even anyway, know what it is. So Josh is manager of his 4.5-year-old son's soccer club. They're dominating the dojo out there. So
0-2.
Tickets are 0-2. Oh.
0-2.
Oh, I thought it was 2-0. No. Maybe I should get on that coaching staff, whip those kids into shape.
We scored 2 goals on ourselves last time.
That's the best part about 4-year-old soccer. All right. Let's talk about the week that was in the capital markets. U.S. stocks, as measured by the good old S&P 500, traded down a little over 3% last week. So the sell-off continues. I leave Josh alone for a week, and all you know what breaks loose. In the small-cap universe, so small company stocks were down 3.3%. International developed markets, so think Japan and developed Europe, they traded down 1.6%. In the emerging markets, we saw a 2% sell-off. What's weird? Well, I guess not weird. In the bond market, we saw rates higher. So as stocks were selling off, people were buying. No, I guess that's not true. Yeah. Wait a second. My brain isn't working right now. So yields were higher, which meant prices are lower.
Yeah.
So people were selling bonds too. I guess they were just getting out of capital markets. The aggregate bond index, so think of the S&P 500 of the bond world, it traded down 0.5% last week. The yield on a 6-month treasury is 5.37%. The yield on a 1-year treasury, 5.17. A 10-year now yields 4.62. I think it got to 4.7 last week, right?
Yeah.
So we're knocking on the door of 5% again on a 10-year. And a 30-year treasury yields 4.72%.
Little flight to safety there on Friday, especially in the morning and overnight on Thursday when the potential for World War III breaking out started hitting
the wires. I know
we're like
saying that in jest, but I don't know that should be that comical. Gold continues its march higher. You know, gold and the dollar typically don't trade together as much as they are right now, but gold is up almost another 2% at $24.11 an ounce, and oil traded down 2.5% at $83.55. a barrel. So most of the economic data we got last week showed the U.S. economy continuing its strength. We got retail sales that were certainly better than expected last week, and we got jobless claims, which were really low and better than expected, which shows the labor market continues to be very strong. Unemployment still at 3.8%. So, you know, when people talk about the economy isn't doing well, I don't know which economy they're talking about, but the United States economy is certainly doing quite well. In fact, earnings season has started. And so, Josh, why don't you, I guess, report or give us an update on the companies that have reported so far. But at the end of the day, the ultimate driver of stock prices is earnings. If when earnings are growing, stock prices will be trading higher. When earnings are declining, the opposite will happen. And earnings continue to grow. And I don't think anybody thought we'd be here, but we are.
Yeah, 70 companies in the S&P 500 have reported. Remember, just the big banks so far is all the real big market movers. You got Netflix on Thursday and Friday, but big tech coming up in a week, and that's going to make or break earnings season. But so far, earnings growth tracking for 3% on the quarter. Tech earnings have been awesome, up 21%. The laggards are energy and healthcare. That's going to reverse next quarter if you look at what's going on in the oil patch. So reasons to be positive in the next couple quarters for earnings season. Revenue growth, 3.3%, but the beat rate, 80%. So, you know, coming in better than expectations and better than the average beat rate. But good economic data is going to ultimately lead to good earnings, which will probably mean higher yields, which totally makes sense. And I think eventually investors will realize that it's not the end of the world, and we'll go back to not necessarily the euphoria that we found at the end of Q1, but you know, recognition that we're kind of back to normal.
Almost. Well, normal, whatever that means. When you look at when you listen to these calls or earnings calls, CEOs are relatively optimistic. There's sort of like this cautious optimism, but you know, their expectations for the rest of 2024 are actually pretty good. So, you know, it's weird when you like listen to a lot of you know, the average man or woman on the street, and they talk about how things are so bad, and I just think, well, where is it bad? Show me. I just can't find where it's bad. You know, inflation still continues to be a problem. So with what Josh just said, and inflation, you know, trending not in the direction that the Federal Reserve wants, especially over the last 3 months, there is no reason for anybody to believe that rates are going to be going down anytime soon. And so the reality of that factor, I think, is the reason we're seeing this correction in the equity markets. Everybody, I guess, save for Josh and I, was still holding hope that the Fed was going to be cutting aggressively in 2024. And I think there's this realization amongst investors, professional and otherwise, that wait a second, we might not get any rate cuts at all in 2024. And that's why we're seeing this repricing of the equity markets. A lot of the euphoria, like Josh said, especially at the end of the first quarter, had to do with the fact that there was still the expectation of rate cuts and that rates were going to be lower. And maybe that will happen, but I think there's a big chunk of the market that's saying, wait a second, maybe this sort of euphoria is a little bit overdone, and that's why we're getting this correction. Remember, we would tell you that you should be buying this correction. You know, if you bought the corrections in 2023, you were certainly handsomely rewarded. We don't know that this is the end of this correction, but, you know, history tells us that buying dips is certainly the right thing to be doing.
Speaking to the euphoria, Friday was sort of emblematic of what's happening, which is like the really economically sensitive stuff, industrials, you know, those names that are geared toward the cycle, those earnings are coming in really strong, and those stocks are the ones outperforming. What underperformed on Friday was those tech names that are up, you know, 80% in the last year.
Yeah, I mean, you look at NVIDIA's down almost 20% from the high. I mean, Apple's, you know, like those high expectation stocks are selling off. And actually, something we're going to talk about this week is a dividend paying investment that we use. Those are the names that did well.
Underneath the surface, like the re-accelerating economic activity stocks are what's outperforming, which bodes well, I think, for the future.
Yeah, I mean, I think the other issue too markets are facing is the reality that's going on in the Middle East. I mean, the situation with Israel and Iran is not comfortable, and hopefully, you know, it doesn't accelerate and get worse. But you know, markets have that in the back of their mind. But again, you know, you look at a chart, and these are all of these things that are happening. While there's certainly a human toll being taken, they've been times to be buying and not selling. Election years historically have been good. You know, the Fed also, they're supposed to be non-political, but the Fed is sort of up against the fact that the closer we get to the election, them doing something drastic, I don't think will be, you know, viewed very. I mean, you know, I guess Powell is a Republican. It's hard for me, you know, I guess I don't really understand what the Republican Party is anymore. So that's why I say that with do it in jest, I guess. So, you know, the reality is we're buying this weakness. We think it's a good opportunity for everybody else to be, but it's probably not over. All right. If you want to be part of the show, you have a question for us or a comment, give us a call 877-670-7117 or go to our website, NorthwestQuadrantWealth.com. When we come back, we're going to talk about what you should be doing with your old 401ks and 403bs. So stick around.
Get your free one-hour retirement review. Meet with a Northwest Quadrant Wealth Management investment advisor today for free. It's our offer to you as a listener to the show. Give us a call today to schedule your portfolio review. 800-743-0988. Again, 800-743-0988.
Are you paying too much for term life insurance? A man age 50 non-tobacco user can obtain $500,000 of coverage for as little as $110 per month. Level rate for 20 years. That's right, guaranteed level rate for 20 years. If you're a smoker, there are great rates available for you as well. Call Term Busters for a quote. 1-800-908-7636. You're probably paying more than you should. Call 1-800-908-7636. Remember, call Term Busters. 1-800-908-7636. Sample rate for preferred non-tobacco rate class. Exam required to qualify.
Connect to the Financial Focus radio show on YouTube or iTunes. Listen to past shows, get our bi-weekly e-news, and keep up to date on the market. You can also sign up for our e-newsletter on our website, northwestquadrantwealth.com. Let's get back to the show.
If you'd like to take one of us up on a free retirement review, one of us will give you an hour of our time to talk about anything in your financial life. So if you have at least $500,000 of investable assets, call our office to get one of those meetings scheduled. The number here is 800-743-0988, or you can always email us by going to our website, northwestquadrantwealth.com. So I read this from Nick Majuli, and I echo this sentiment because I used to do the same thing. I saw the light sooner than Nick did, but Josh is going to see the light eventually. Nick says, I stopped buying active investments, i.e. individual stocks, etc., when I realized that they monopolize most of my attention despite being a small percentage of my portfolio. I watched them all the time. This is why I went passive, and you should too. You can't put a price on mental freedom. So here's the thing, and as it relates to you all out there listening, a lot of you have a portfolio that is, for the most part, done pretty well. You know, it's in index funds or exchange-traded funds that track indexes with the vast majority of your money. But you might, let's say you have a couple million bucks, you might have 100,000 or 150,000 in individual stocks. And that's where you look at when you pull up your portfolio. How are these things doing? Those are the names you follow. But at the end of the day, what's ironic about it is those index funds over time are going to beat those individual stocks. There's periods when those individual stocks will do better. But, you know, unless you are, like, I have a buddy who was one of the very first employees at Amazon. Obviously, that worked out well for him. But that was pure luck, not skill on his part. And he would be the first to tell you that. He says, I already won the lottery once, Tyler. I'm not going to win again. And you're not either. So the reality is just save yourself energy and time and just – and money, and because at the end of the day, that 150,000 or 100,000 or whatever extra you have in individual stocks will do better, especially from a tax standpoint, if you just have them in the index. Because remember, if you get to a point where you own that individual stock and it's in a taxable account and it's done really well or it's done okay, and now you are presented with this capital gain that you have to realize to sell it, even though, let's say, something happens like Boeing for the last 8 years where it's been a disaster, you're in a situation where you're like, I don't want to sell this to pay taxes, but this stock has been a disaster. Or another good example is Microsoft from 2000 to 2015 did nothing. The stock did nothing for 15 years. And obviously the S&P did fine over that period. So you know, I get it. It's fun and it's interesting. Just do it without real money. Just like pick stocks and like, or just go put money on the horses or Kate, how many three pointers Caitlin Clark's going to score. I don't
that
know.
That sell decision and the realization of taxes. Very, very tough when you've done, when you got a low basis in a stock.
Yeah. I mean, it becomes, you know, the answer. What do people just don't sell? I mean, we, this happens to us all the time. We get a client, you know, and they have had owned IPM since 1976. And it's like their basis is next to nothing. And it's like, well, I'm never going to sell this. So we just put it in this separate account and it sits there and it's a dog. But they don't want to pay taxes. So it just sits there. And it's like, well, I'm just going to wait till I die. Kids will get a step up basis and then they can deal with it. And it's like, just don't be in that position. I get when in 1976, index funds weren't really a thing, but they are a thing now. And so don't get put in that position. And then Nick also wrote a book, and he wrote, this, he said, I honestly love the most helpful critical review of my book written in October of 2022, literally the same month the market bottomed. Market's up 45% then. And so the most helpful Amazon review is, I just keep buying and gotten poorer and poorer following this book's advice, which is funny because that came out when the market hit a bottom. And if the person had just, you know, stayed the course, then they would have obviously been fine. Okay, Mr. Finelli. A lot of people listening to our show have old 401ks at previous employers. I know that you can tell a story about one of our clients that has maybe 8 or 10 different old 401ks. Also, 403Bs fall in that mix. So if you work for a hospital or a nonprofit, you know, you might have an old retirement plan. I guess give our listening audience the three options that people have, and then we can talk about which one we would prefer.
Well, regulators, of course, want us to tell you that you can leave it in the existing 401k. That's, we view as probably the least preferable option, especially if you've got multiple past employers and, you know, there's small incremental amounts of money. You can, of course, roll those old 401ks into your new employer-sponsored plan.
If you have one.
If you have one. And, you know, that can be a good option, especially if it's a big plan that has, you know, low cost, broadly diversified fund choices, that you, the employee, are not paying the plan's expense ratios. And that in the smaller plans, you often are. And so that's definitely something to keep abreast of. But third, you can roll it into an IRA and consolidate them. That to us is the best option. Especially if you're doing it at, you know, a big custodian like Schwab.
Well, and there's these two options, a firm like ours. Or
you do it your own, or you can roll it to a registered investment advisory firm like us that would invest it similarly to how you should do it yourself, which is just in broadly diversified, low-cost index funds. But the best choice, you know, if you've got that employer-sponsored plan and it's a good 401k, you know, and you're contributing actively and it's something that you watch a lot, and you have a new job, that's a really good option for people that are still in the accumulation phase. But, you know, we're pretty big advocates of using an IRA just because you're not limited to the choices within the plan. You can get the lowest cost, best options available to that are on the market. And so it also just lets you keep track of that stuff, because when you've got those disparate 401ks, I can't tell you how often I see someone that left $30,000 in a stable value fund from a 401k that they had like 13 years ago, and it wasn't really actually invested, and the opportunity cost of doing that ended up being six figures, and it was just because administratively it became a hassle, and the longer you left that hanging chat out there, the less apt you are to actually do something. And then people end up coming to this, you know, inflection point, oh, I'm about to retire, now's when I'm going to consolidate it. And it's like, you should have remedied that issue 12 years ago and you'd have an extra $100,000. But that's something that we see so frequently, and that's why we harp on this endlessly almost every show, is because there's definitely someone out there listening right now that's in that situation.
Yeah, I mean, the reality is, I mean, I worked in the investment business ever since I graduated from college, and even when I was in the investment business, the 401k options we had weren't great. And so the first thing I always did once I left an employer was roll my 401k money into an IRA at Schwab, because then my investment choices became unlimited. They went from 20 or 25 that were in the plan to now an unlimited option at Schwab, and really I could control the cost and pick the exact funds that I wanted. So, you know, there's no reason really for you. I mean, you of course can leave the money there, but like at the end of the day, you're going to be most likely better off because you have the unlimited investment choices that exist either at a big custodian like a Schwab or a Fidelity, where you can either use their help or pick them yourself, or have a firm like a registered investment advisory fee-based fiduciary firm help you do it. And like Josh said, you can consolidate everything and have everything in one place. You know, so many of you, like Josh said, just forget about it, leave it. And you, once in a while you get a statement, you're like, oh yeah, you're costing yourself real money, because if you could have gotten a 7 or 8% return, if you had moved it over time, that's going to compound to real money. So consolidate, consolidate, consolidate. All right. If you want to sign up for our e-newsletter, Josh and I do a video in the middle and end of every month where we talk about what's going on in markets and how that affects your money. Go to our website, northwestquadrantwealth.com. We'll put you on the list. When we come back, we're going to tackle some of your email questions, so stick around.
Sign up for our e-news today. Get the latest thoughts on the market every other week from Northwest Quadrant Wealth Management delivered right to your inbox. The short 5 to 6 minute video helps you keep up with the market. You can always watch past videos on YouTube or on northwestquadrantwealth.com.
Traffic, the most weather. FM 100.1 is News Talk 1110, KBND, Bend.
See for yourself what more quality, luxury, and performance feel like at Kendall Mazda of Bend. With Mazda, spend less and get more. With new spring incentives, get special 3.9% APR for 63 months on many new Mazda models. A new 2024 Mazda CX-90 Turbo Select starts at just $39,980. A new 2024 Mazda CX-5 starts at just $30,042. Or get a new all-wheel drive 2024 Mazda CX-30 Select Sport starting at just $27,372. Why settle for less? With Mazda, get more. Stop by Kendall Mazda of Bend today. Kendall, let's start something great.
VIN number R1119800, R0423869, and RM611822. 3.9% APR for 63 months on select 2024 Mazda models and not approved credit with $1,842 per $1,000 bar and zero down payment. Credit score of 720 or higher may be required to qualify. All factory rebates subject to change. Prices not include title registration tax or $250 admin fee. Subject to prior sales, see the details. Offer expires 4/30/24.
This is Kerwin with Mid-State Power Products in Redmond. The Kubota Orange Day sales event is a big deal. Here's why. Kubota L-Series tractors. Quality, comfort, and adaptability all come together in one tough package. These tractors are the core of the Kubota lineup, and Mid-State Power Products is stocked up. Stop into Mid-State Power Products before June 30th to get zero down, 0% APR for 84 months on select new L-Series tractors. Come pick out your Kubota L-Series tractor today. Now through June 30th, see us or go to KubotaUSA.com for full disclaimer.
Listening to Financial Focus Radio Show, where you get honest and actionable advice every week from the partners at Northwest Quadrant Wealth Management. Remember, you can always listen to past shows on iTunes or find us on northwestquadrantwealth.com.
Welcome back. Thanks for joining us on Financial Focus Radio. We appreciate you spending some of your weekend with us, your beautiful weekend. Hopefully you are out and about enjoying all the great things that Central Oregon has to offer. Still going to try to get up on the mountain, do a little skiing before that ends, now that all the people from the other side of the mountain are no longer here in droves. So this is along the lines of we've talked about in the past, like understand your circumstances as it relates to how you vote and what you actually complain about, because you know, we talked about as it related to taxes. So many people out there that Josh and I talk to don't really pay taxes or meaningful taxes, yet they complain about it. And it's like, Really? Like, relative to the benefit you get, are you really going to complain about the fact that your tax rate is 7%? Like, come on. But here's this other, under the other similar heading is, the United States produces more oil than Russia and Saudi Arabia now. Global crude oil and production in 2023, the United States was 3.9 million barrels above the closest competitor, and that was Russia, and then Saudi Arabia was about 4 million barrels under the United States. So, you know, everybody complains about, and this is why the oil prices, and it's like, well, the U.S. is the biggest producer of oil in the world now, and so, like, there's all, you can complain about it all you want, but we are now the biggest producer of oil in the world. And so you can say that that's not, you know, so many people in the U.S. think it's not happening, but when in fact it is. And so just deal with the facts and not what you read on Facebook. Like, come on, people. Like, deal with facts, not Facebook. Facebook isn't fact. Just because you read it on the internet doesn't mean it's true. In this, well, and I should say that this comes from actual real, not Facebook. I don't get my data for the radio show on Facebook. We should do a whole show.
We get it from Twitter.
We should do a whole show based on Facebook data. And then this is I love this. This is titled "The Most Absurd Number in CPI." CPI is the Consumer Price Index, or the inflation number at the consumer level. So according to the U.S. government, the cost of health insurance in the U.S. has declined by 15% over the last year, and is 3% lower than it was 5 years ago. Mr. Finelli, you have a strange look on your face. Well, let me explain. How is that possible when we know the cost of health insurance is certainly much higher today than it was 5 years ago? Well, here's how that works. The government is not using actual premium data to determine the cost of health insurance, but instead using changes in the retained earnings of health insurers. So when their retained earnings decline, as they have over the last few years, the government says the cost of health insurance has declined as well.
Didn't we?
So is this the most absurd number in CPI? Absolutely.
Didn't we get like a 17% increase on our premiums?
But the government, the government calculates it based on.
Wasn't it double digits last year too?
Yeah, no. I'm not arguing.
I know.
The government calculates it not on the increase in premiums that we're paying.
I know.
They calculate it based on the retained earnings of the health insurer.
I'm just trying to recall our own specific.
Oh, it's been more than double digits for the last 3 years.
I mean, we're tracking like 30%
over the last 2 years. It's insane. Right? But yeah. And so when they look at health insurance related costs in the CPI data, the government says that that's actually down. And so when you know, all of us that live in the real world, this is an inflationary force in our life that has continued. I mean, it's never gone down since we've been paying for it. And so, but the government says that over the last 5 years that health insurance is down 3% because the retained earnings of health insurers is down. It's absurd. It's unbelievable that this is true. Okay, let's tackle some emails. We got an email from Bev F. Bev doesn't say where she is. Bev says, I love your radio show, even when I listen a week or so later. Thanks for that. In an episode a couple weeks ago, you again mentioned how to raise your child's financial IQ, the most important thing. FYI, I tried to buy the book online, but can't find it anywhere, but on Amazon Kindle only. Not available, new users. So I sent this, I emailed it to her. We have a PDF copy of this book. So what Bev is referring to is there's a book written by a guy named John Lim. He's an MD, he's a doctor, but he wrote a book called How to Raise Your Child's Financial IQ, The Most Important Things. It's a 64-page book. We highly recommend it for kids or grandkids. Bev also mentions, also you said after 70, something you don't pay taxes on. Also, you said after 70, something you don't pay is taxes on Social Security benefits, but I'm taxed every year and I'm 75. My accountant and you have a finance smart ass at Google say everyone above a certain income is taxed until they die. So, Bev, I hopefully we didn't actually say that. I don't think we said that because we know that that's not, in fact, true.
Yeah, definitely not.
If we did, we apologize. So the reality is the taxation on Social Security benefits are as followed. If you are an individual taxpayer and you make between $25,000 and $34,000, you pay taxes on 50% of your Social Security benefit. If your combined income, if you're filing jointly, is between $32,000 and $44,000, you're paying 50% you're paying taxes on 50% of your benefit. If you're an individual tax filer and you make over $34,000, 85% of your Social Security benefit is taxed. And if you're married filing jointly and you make over $44,000, 85% of your Social Security benefit is taxed. So most people out there listening to us right now, your Social Security benefit is taxed at either 50% of its tax or 85% of it based on your income. And so, you know, I guess if it's under 25 grand, your Social Security benefit is not in fact taxed. So thank you. If we did say that, Bev, we appreciate you bringing it to our attention so we could correct it. All right. We got an email from JB in Tumalo. It says, hi, Tyler and Josh. I've been investing over 30 years. In that time, I've always had some money allocated to international investments. Do you guys think it makes sense for me to be investing in international investments? I have about 20% of my portfolio invested in international index funds. This is a loaded question, right? Yeah. So underlying this question is, you know, the unbelievable underperformance over the last 15 years of international relative to the U.S.
You've been investing for 30 years. Half of your investment life.
JB's asking if you should give up.
Yeah, I want to. No, I mean, there's definitely listeners out there and then intellectual case that I respect that says, you know, and Jack Bogle actually says this with, you know, the founder of Vanguard, don't own any international funds in your allocation. You know, the S&P derives somewhere roughly 38, 40% of its revenue from sales abroad. I'm reticent to throw in the towel because we're...
Especially at this point.
Yeah. Because we've been doubling down for so long.
We're hiking the mountain and we can see the top.
Just... And, the reason I would say that, right, is like in an environment like now, and international diversification really has actually been kind of working for a quarter here, a little bit more than a quarter, when the dollar is rising and there's this interest rate differential and it's like a giant vacuum sucking money from abroad. If you're a Japanese insurance company collecting premiums, you're going to go invest it at a 0.1% in Japanese government bonds, or you're going to move it into dollars and go buy U.S. government debt. Of course, you're going to get the 5% interest rate, right? But my point is, like, as the dollar continues to climb, those companies, those big internationals that are selling goods abroad that are comparatively more expensive, they suffer on a relative basis. So that's why denominated in dollars, owning those foreign assets, you do well. And I think that's why, you know, prior to this week, really, the Euro Stoxx 600 and the Nikkei in Japan were at all-time highs and had been outperforming over the last quarter. I think that's a trend that we might be in the infancy of reversal. And, you know, quite frankly, like, there's so many really, really great businesses domiciled abroad that I want to own personally. The TSMCs, the Novartises of the world, that it's tough to really give up. We don't have an overwhelmingly large allocation to developed international, but there are multi-decade periods, and we exited one before we got into this period of underperformance, where if you didn't own developed international stocks, you had an atrocious period of performance.
And so, the other thing I'd say in the more immediate short term is that Christine Lagarde is doing this world tour. The European Union is probably going to be cutting rates before the U.S. does, and that in the short term is certainly going to be bullish for European stocks.
Yeah.
All right. If you want to sign up for a free retirement review, one of us will give you an hour of our time to talk about anything in your financial life. So if you have at least $500,000 of investable money, give our office a call to get one of those scheduled, 800-743-0988, or go to our website, northwestquadrantwealth.com. When we come back, we're going to talk about dividend investing, so stick around.
Get your free one-hour retirement review. Meet with a Northwest Quadrant Wealth Management Investment Advisor today for free. It's our offer to you as a listener to the show. Give us a call today to schedule your portfolio review. 800-743-0988. Again, 800-743-0988.
Bend Chamber presents the 7th Annual Young Professionals Summit Emerge on Friday, May 3rd at the Tower Theater. Powered by U.S. Bank, Meta, COCC, and News Channel 21, the YP Summit features keynote Pamela Barnum, trust strategist and body language expert, and interactive performance by Mosley Wada. Your choice of 8 lunch and learn breakout sessions, networking opportunities, plus an after party to cap off the day. Visit BenYP.org for details and to purchase tickets for yourself or your entire team. That's BenYP.org.
Did you know one of the best investments you can make? It's in yourself. At My Computer Career, in just a few months, you could start your new career in the high-demand, recession-resistant field of information technology. Isn't it time you invest in you and start a career in networking, cybersecurity, AI, or upskill to boost your current IT career? So, get the ROI you deserve at My Computer Career. No experience necessary. Start now at mycomputercareer.edu.
Financial aid is available for qualified students, including the GI Bill.
Thank you for joining Financial Focus Radio Show. Honest, transparent analysis brought to you every week by Tyler Simonis and Josh Finelli. Call the show anytime at 877-670-7117. We'll try to answer your question on the air in the following weeks. Now, back to the team from Northwest Quadrant Wealth Management.
If you want to sign up for our e-newsletter, Josh and I do a short-ish video in the middle and end of every month where we talk about what's going on in the markets and how that's affecting your money. So if you don't get enough of us on the weekend, you want to see our beautiful shining faces, go to our website, northwestquadrantwealth.com, and put your email in there, and that's the only thing we'll send you is... I noticed we've been sending out our hard copy newsletter via email too.
Yeah,
man, we're moving up in the world, moving on up to the east side.
We're no longer Luddites.
Yeah. So there's always this question when markets get to all time highs. Obviously, we've had this correction from the all time high, but you know, people are always nervous to put money to work in the market when markets are at all time high. And so what I did is I looked at what the returns for the S&P 500 are when it hits an all-time high. The average return since 1970, a year after the market hits an all-time high, is 9.43. 3 years, 10.54, and 5 years, 9.63. So in every time period, 1, 3, 5, on average, of course, there's times when that's not true, you've done very well by putting money to work, even when the market was at an all-time high. And this is according to Ritholtz Wealth Management using Y charts. So, the answer is keep investing, set up an automatic investment plan and just keep investing. That is always the answer. Invest through all things that, no matter what happens, just put your head down and keep investing. So what's the impact of higher for longer interest rates, right? So to me, higher for longer, I just think these are normalized interest rates, and this is sort of the new normal, but it's the old normal, right? Like the last 15 years was the very abnormal period, and now we're going back to what most of us that are over 35 years old realize as normal. So credit card rates, this is one of those really tough ones because credit card rates are the highest I've ever been. The average rate on a credit card in America is 21.6%. That's really high. I don't know that will stay up there forever, but it'll probably be there for a while. The interest rate on a 48 month new car loan, is now 8.57%. That's the highest since 2001. The interest expense on U.S. public debt, which now is $1.02 trillion over the last 2 months. That's the most it's ever been. So we are now, as a country, paying over $1 trillion just to pay the interest on our debt. Not a good place to be. Mortgage rates, obviously, moving back to 7%. They're at that 7%. That's probably going to stay relatively normalized. I mean, somewhere between 6.5% and 7.5% is probably where we'll settle for an extended period of time. The yield on a 10-year treasury, which had moved down to 3.79% last December, is now back up to 4.67%. That's the highest in quite some time. But the good news is, for all of you baby boomers that have money in the bank, savers are going to continue to earn yields of over 5% as long as the Fed doesn't cut. The national average on a savings account in a bank is less than 0.5%. So you need to do something. You're not getting anything if you're leaving it at the bank. And I know our bank friends are not liking this, but it's just the truth. You can easily get 5% if you look at money markets, high yield savings accounts, or if you simply buy U.S. Treasury bills directly. So those are some of the consequences of higher rates. So, Mr. Finelli, let's talk about dividend investing. So I guess describe basically what, at the most basic terms, what is dividend investing, as at least as how we think about it?
Dividend investing for income is definitely how it's framed, right? And that's buying stocks that pay dividends. You know, when we look at client portfolios, or not client portfolios, but really prospective client portfolios, what do we see out there? We see a whole lot of dividend investors. What names did we see? We see the AT&Ts.
You mean the individual stocks? Yeah.
You know, and AT&T is probably number one, I'd say, that we see. And of the hundreds of portfolios, individual stocks, like the number one pick amongst boomer dividend investors is probably AT&T. We obviously see a lot of energy names.
Chevron's high on the
list. Yeah, Chevron's high on the list. ExxonMobil, not quite so much, but... Verizon, you see the telecoms, you know, you go down the list, like it's all the usual suspects by generation.
So, but what is a dividend? Like in the most basic terms, a
dividend is just, you know, the free cash flow that a company generates, often free cash flow. Remember when rates were zero, a lot of companies were actually borrowing money to pay dividends, but, that's beside the point. Companies can either reinvest in the business, or pay it out to you as a shareholder, or what of course has taken preference as of late, amongst some types of businesses, they just buy back their own stock, which you as a shareholder, just as good for you as a dividend. But, you know, if you're getting a dividend, it is taxable at ordinary income rates. So, you know, that's...
Well, I mean, if it's a qualified dividend, it's taxed between 0 and 20.
I was going to say, until you've held it for a year. But again, you know, a lot of people out there are investing for the yield. And what they'll tell you is, you know, we don't care what the stock price does, as long as the income payment is consistent. And so, you know, they're taking distributions from their portfolio, presumably, and living off of the dividend income. When you think about, like, what pays a dividend in the universe of stocks, you know, it's typically those old line businesses, banks, industrials, healthcare, consumer staples, energy. Those are the sectors, materials, that are really paying out, because they're not businesses that are growing at a fast pace, so they're not reinvesting in the business to the same degree that some of those so-called growth sectors are doing.
So what we think, you out there listening, so we're not, we don't like emphasize that in our business with our clients dividend investing. We absolutely certainly have dividend exposure in our client equity portfolios, and we would advocate for you to do it the way that we do it, which is through an exchange traded fund. We use the Schwab US Dividend Equity ETF. The symbol is S as in Sam, CHD, SCHD. You know, it's really low cost. It's 6 basis points, so 0.06%. It has 104 positions. And like Josh said, the names that it owns are the Lockheed Martins, the Chevrons, the Pepsis, the UPS, the Cokes, Amgen. So like old line, more boring businesses, and it has about a 3.5% yield. And so when you think about
which is really low historically, actually.
Yeah, for this. But I mean, it's still relative to the S&P sub 2%. It's still a good yield.
Yeah.
And so when you think about it, it is a way to get lower volatility stock market exposure with some yield, especially for some of you that are retired. It can kick off some of that income that you need to take on a monthly basis. And it, like Josh, as long as the dividends are qualified, which in this case it will be, you're going to pay a relatively low rate on that dividend. And so, you know, while we're not focused on dividend investing in our business, we do have an exposure within our client portfolios to this dividend-focused ETF because we like the names that are in that portfolio. And the bonus in our case is that it happens to have a really attractive yield relative to what's out there.
We're definitely still total return investors. This is a way for us to get that high-quality sort of value tint.
With some yield.
Yeah, that's historically done pretty well with elevated rates and You know, I think even the last week's a good example. Like, it just crushed the NASDAQ.
Yeah, and so that's the reason it's a sort of lower volatility stock exposure with some yield, which can also cushion that. And when you look at the quarterly dividend on this thing, if you have a lot of money in it, for a lot of people, you could just live on that. And so, again, we don't think you should focus on dividend investing because that can be very dangerous. You give up a lot of returns. But one way to get some dividend investment exposure instead of buying an individual stock like the ones Josh mentioned is to do it in an exchange-traded fund like this one that is very low cost, and you get the diversification factor and not that individual stock volatility. All right, if you want to take one of us up on a free retirement review, one of us will give you an hour of our time to talk about anything in your financial life. So if you have at least $500,000 of investable assets, call our office. The number here is 800-743-0988, or you can go to our website, northwestquadrantwealth.com. When we come back, we're going to talk about securities-based lending, so stick around.
Sign up for our e-news today. Get the latest thoughts on the market every other week from Northwest Quadrant Wealth Management delivered right to your inbox. The short 5 to 6 minute video helps you keep up with the market. You can always watch past videos on northwestquadrantwealth.com.